Sorry.
Yeah, this is because, for those of you who aren't familiar with us, this is because we put the recordings of our main speakers on our website so people can listen to them who aren't here today. So we separate the recordings. So Muna Killingback joined the Center for Women in Politics and Public Policy with many years of experience advocating for and writing about women's and human rights, peace, and social and economic justice issues. At CWPPP, she works with the Gender Leadership and Public Policy graduate programs, oversees communications, and assists with fund development. Formerly at the Center for Rebuilding Sustainable Communities After Disasters at UMass Boston, she had previously served as executive director of the Cambridge-based nonprofit organization, Women Explore, formerly the Theological Opportunities Program. She is a former director of communications for the World YWCA headquarters of the Global Women's Movement in Geneva, where she has been one of its first ever young women interns. As a freelance writer and editor, she specialized in the work and communication needs of nonprofit and non-governmental organizations, NGOs, including grant writing. She continues to be active in the World YWCA Network and is a member of the Executive Committee of the YWCA World Service Council. She has also served on YW Boston's Advocacy Committee and is an appointed member of UMass Boston's Restorative Justice Commission, as well as serving on the McCormick Racial Equity Task Force and the Professional Staff Union's Committee on Racial Equity. Muna earned a master's degree in international relations and a graduate certificate in human rights at UMass Boston. She is currently a fourth-year doctoral student in the Global Governance and Human Society PhD program, also based at UMass Boston's McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies, where her research is focused on the feminist peace-building work of women's NGOs and faith-based organizations. Muna is also an affiliated faculty member in the UMass Boston Human Rights Minor. Muna is a proud Arab American, the daughter of an immigrant and refugee from the Middle East on her father's side, and also has deep roots in rural Pennsylvania on her mother's side. Muna has invited some of her alumni here today to speak to us a bit about their experience, and she will introduce each of those women as the time comes. So, welcome, Muna. Did we lose
Oh,
Muna?
sorry. Here I am. Sorry. Thank you, Linda, for introducing
Okay.
me. Yeah, I was muted. You'd think I would know better by now, but thank you for again for inviting me today. I'd like to say how lovely it is to be back with you. And just hearing your own reflections about which women have inspired you reminded me of what an important group this is and what a wonderful space it is for growing together as women and learning together as women. I thought all of your contributions were really inspiring to me too. So, and I'm going to touch on that a little bit in this talk because I was glad to be here last week, Linda. To hear you mention the double entendre in the title, because actually I had only been reading it one day away, thinking of women who are inspiring and not about how to inspire women. So I'm going to look at both ways in this talk and also share some reflections about how we might consider inspiring women in through the work of women's organizations. So when we think about women who are inspiring, oftentimes the biggest names come to mind first. Hillary Clinton, Madeleine Albright, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Shirley Chisholm, Kamala Harris, like women in politics often. Internationally, we might think of Malala or Ellen Sirleaf Johnson. And I always personally appreciate the work of Vandana Shiva and Wangari Maathai in Kenya, environmental activists and Latin American indigenous activists, Dolores Cacuango and Rigoberta Menchú. Some of these women led extremely difficult struggles to challenge authority and to seek basic human rights and justice. And so while I recognize and can be inspired by some traits in all women leaders, persistence, vision, courage, and steadfastness to push through against obstacles, I also recognize that sometimes women leaders are critiquing power and bucking the grain of establishment power, and sometimes they are serving it themselves. And when they are serving it or advancing it, because we live in a world where power is so unevenly and unfairly distributed, I don't necessarily find them inspiring anymore. So, sometimes in our American bubble, we might not realize that some of the names that come to mind when we think of our great women leaders are not universally admired, because their work to advance global hegemony has really been working for the powerful. For example, when Madeleine Albright passed away last year, feminists and others in the Arab world recalled that she had said in an interview with Leslie Stahl in 60 Minutes that the deaths of thousands of Iraqi children was a price the U.S. was willing to pay. So sometimes women power brokers representing superpowers might not be the model of feminist peace building or justice that could yield global admiration. And even while we might pedestalize people, particularly women who have accomplished great things, broken glass ceilings, and made enormous impact, we can still make room for critiques. For example, I have a friend and respected colleague and social justice advocate from India who even critiques Mother Teresa for emphasizing charity over social reforms that could obviate the need for charity. I will just mention something about my own research and the peace-building work of women's organizations, that I have seen a paradox in that feminist international relations scholars warn that we should never essentialize women as being more peaceable than men. And of course, there are many examples of women who advocated for the use of violence in war. But at the same time, many women's organizations working for peace have been founded on the basis that women coming together are more peaceable than men and care more about life because they are the nurturers of life. So these are just some thoughts about women's leadership in general. And when women political leaders or activists are also the first to come to mind when we think of women leaders, there are also women leaders in other realms, such as the arts, the humanities, science, and in theology. And these women have also broken barriers and laid the path for others to follow in their fields. So I also think of the unsung heroes when we talk about women's leadership, and I think many of you mentioned them in the focus talk. Those who quietly role modeled lives that made an impact on the circle around them or who provided personal encouragement or support. And I would start with my own mom too, since many people mentioned their moms. Joan Caldawi, who nobody would label a woman leader per se. She was a talented artist and taught art and later earned a living by getting a second degree in accounting and working as a senior accountant in industry. She was very hardworking, diligent, responsible, community minded. And Mary Margaret, she was from Pennsylvania too, from a very rural area. And her artwork graced the town and her church and my high school's graduation balls. And she was a devout Catholic too, who was guided by her faith, who supported the radical nuns and taught Catholic social justice principles and lived by them. And it may be surprising to think about this, but even in such heavily patriarchal institutions like the Catholic Church, with their right and left wings, women have carved out spaces to hone and develop leadership skills, often driven by a keen faith-based desire for social justice. Here I am speaking to of the women religious who have been tremendous champions of human rights and social justice. Some of them threatened power so much that they lost their lives for it. Here we can recall the three Catholic nuns and a lay worker who were murdered in El Salvador for their human rights activism by members of the US-backed National Guard. And there are so many unsung women leaders who could have achieved greatness if they had been given the chance. If they had not had to work long hours and tedious jobs to feed their families, care for children and elders and the sick. But because of them, others were able to flourish and thrive. And so in my mind, they are leaders who led in love and in grace and are also heroines. So our best are not always the people who reach the corridors of power. Of course, I give the caveat here that women always have to guard against messages that our needs and wants are always secondary to those of others. My life was also greatly influenced by the local, national, and international YWCA, Young Women's Christian Association, but it's mostly just called the YWCA now. A YWCA program for high school girls enabled us to meet and learn about the career paths of women in all kinds of professions, including STEM fields, to know that women could choose their own directions and follow their unique interests and talents, even if this was not always the message the world was sending us. My other role models and life mentors were from the YWCA. They are not household names, but they serve the YWCA movement, helping to improve their communities or our global village. I'll pay tribute to them by naming a few here. And because the YWCA is a preeminently anti-racist institution, its dual mission in the U.S. is the elimination of racism and the empowerment of women. It was one of the first organizations to become integrated in the U.S. My mentors and YWCA leaders are very diverse, Black and brown and white and indigenous, all beautiful people. Their names are Priscilla Stouffer, Iris Jones, Doreen Boyd, Elaine Hess Steele, Elaine Carlson, Razia Ismail Abbasi, and many, many more. I have learned from them and have been and continue to be, in many cases, challenged by them to do more and to be more. Elaine Hess Steele, who was the General Secretary of the World YWCA for the first 7 years I was there, was an especially important role model. She was a leader who grew leaders. She was not a cult of personality leader with an outsized ego who always demanded the limelight, but put all of us forward to develop our own talents and skills. I remember her sending me to NGO meetings at the UN in Geneva. And as a very young woman, I was terrified and I wasn't sure what I could do or say there. And when I expressed this fear to her, Elaine told me that the YWCA believed in baptism by fire. Despite my fears, this technique somehow worked its magic, and I learned what I needed to do at these meetings. The YWCA has historically been a place for growing diverse women leaders. They did this by reserving positions of leadership for women on their boards, committees, and staff, so they could develop and practice and learn leadership skills without negative mansplaining influences in the room, which can happen, obviously, sometimes, that men take the floor and speak more than women. The YWCA offered programs specifically geared to nurturing the leadership potential of young women, such as the Young Women's Internship Program that I was fortunate to be a part of. And then later, when I was on the staff, I was a supervisor and collaborator and instructor and student of the interns. The YWCA was always practicing two-way intergenerational mentoring, as well as peer mentoring. And the culture of mentoring was built into the DNA of the organization, as it is, I believe, for also Women Explore as well. And Women Explore, now celebrating our 50th anniversary, inspires women leaders, of course. I found inspiration here and solace that I was not alone with my own particular struggles and challenges. I gained insights about my path, and I wanted to mention in particular being inspired by Emily Robertson, who went back to school for her doctorate, and Josephine, who went back to school for her master's after age 50. And women who claimed their power are women who spoke truths about their lives, really often breaking barriers against silence. I remember one especially moving focus talk I heard here given by my dear late friend, Judith Cohen, who discussed her marriage to an abusive man. Here too, you have created space for growing women's leadership. So kudos to you all at Women Explore for creating this safe space for women to be and to share and to grow. And I'd like to again honor the contributions of founding director Elizabeth Dodson Gray, who helped to shape the organization in a feminist mold. As well as the emotional honesty that Women Explore engenders, I'd like to mention the intellectual stimulation that it has had, that is offered with fascinating speakers who are often at the cutting edge of their fields. More. Another key incubator for women's leadership, especially in Massachusetts, has been the Gender Leadership and Public Policy Graduate Program that is based at the Center for Women in Politics and Public Policy, where I work. And the center itself has also been a site of growing women's leadership through its many programs and conferences and opportunities for women to gain experience in leadership. Formerly known as the Program for Women in Politics and Public Policy, it was founded by a passionate and visionary woman, Betty Tamor, in 1968, because she noticed how few women were entering politics. It's now called the Gender Leadership and Public Policy Program and has more than 850 alumni making a difference in politics, public policy, in government and nonprofits, and even in the private sector in philanthropy and corporate social responsibility. I learned so much from GLPP students, and I've also seen up close the harm that our unequal educational system has done as students with amazing minds who came from underserved communities with poorly funded schools had to struggle more because these schools did not always adequately prepare them academically. And I've seen up close the impact of systemic racism on mental health and feelings of self-worth and dreams of self-actualization. So our students are also heroes to me, as so many have overcome obstacles and have gone on to achieve great things. But for some, I must say also, the weight of the oppressive systems we have in our society and the lack of support has been too much to bear, and they did not end up finishing their graduate education. And that is a tragedy, not only at the personal, but also at the society level, and a loss for us all. So to inspire women, I believe we still need to create safe spaces for them, even small ones, where their talents can be acknowledged and nurtured. Men in leadership, generally from elite classes, have always had their own clubs and spaces. So we parallel this and do it in a subversive way too. We also need to work for equity and justice in society, as we know, and to erase the structural violence that holds women back so that everyone can develop their God-given potential. And I also recognize the important work of subversive women who can and will also help to change the power dynamics in our patriarchal and oppressive society and move us toward a better world and society. So I am now privileged and delighted to invite some wonderful colleagues who are all alumni of the Gender Leadership and Public Policy, or the Master of Public Administration, Gender Leadership and Public Policy track at UMass Boston, to tell us what has inspired them to be leaders. Thank you. So let me see. I would like to invite Julie. Where's Julie? Is Julie here? Hi, Julie. Julie, would you like to start us off? And if somebody needs to go quickly, if one of you from the GLPP program, you could just maybe write me a note in the chat and I'll call on you next. So,
Okay.
oh, Julie, could you just introduce yourself? You sent me a little bio, which I do have somewhere if you want me to read it. I'll introduce you because you were the one who sent me a bio. Okay. And then
Okay.
Julie is a registered nurse and the executive director of the Congolese American Women Empowerment and Leadership, a 501c3 organization based in Brockton. Her academic and community interests are policy advocacy, education, healthcare, and economic promotion to improve the standard of living for African women, refugees, and immigrants. So thank you, Julie. Go ahead. What has inspired you, Julie? Tell us.
Okay, thank you, Muna. So, what inspired me to become a leader is first and foremost my mother, and I heard many of our speakers say the same. She was a strong woman and a Catholic leader as well in her community. She was born in the Democratic Republic of Congo in Africa, in a country and culture that did not allow leadership for women, except within the confines of marriage and motherhood. She encouraged me to get an education, and she despised early marriage, which she considered a downfall for a woman's self-fulfillment. My second mentor is, of course, the GLPP program, if I can say so, at UMass. That gave me the tools to become an effective leader in a world where being Black, a woman and an immigrant born in Africa in a non-English speaking country puts one at a disadvantage in terms of leadership. The program has allowed me to acquire that assurance to stand before diverse audiences and deliver powerful messages about the issues close to my heart, health, education, and economic empowerment of African women in the US and in Africa. Most African refugee and immigrant women settled in the USA in the early 1990s, fleeing wars and sexual violence. Once here, they still carry the cultural burden of female inferiority and male supremacy. They seldom attempt to get an education and achieve self-fulfillment. My goal in my nonprofit organizations is to assist women born in Africa to find the strength and the courage to acquire an education and achieve their dreams of becoming strong, productive, and independent human beings. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Julie. That was wonderful. Really interesting. I hope you can stay on too for the Q&A, you know, in case someone else has any other questions. So I said I would just invite everyone to speak also in alpha order then. Let's see. Oh, Chanel gave me her bios. Let me do Chanel first. Cassandra and Fernanda, if you have any bio info, you can put it in the chat or I can, you know, or you can just read it when it comes to be your turn. So, Chanel Fields recently graduated with her Master of Public Administration from the McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies in the Gender Leadership and Public Policy track. She also holds a Bachelor's of Science in Exercise and Health Science with a research background in health disparities and access among women of color and communities of color. Chanel currently holds a position as a program coordinator at the Manning College of Nursing and Health Sciences, ensuring that both undergraduate and graduate programs and academic supports reflect the diverse student body at UMass Boston. Shout out to UMass Boston for being the fourth most diverse university in the United States, by the way. So, Chanel will continue her passion to eliminate disparities in healthcare and ensure equitable access among diverse populations and communities of color. So, Chanel, what inspires you?
What inspires me? Many women have inspired me growing up into being a leader I am today. We'll first start off with my grandmother, who is a biracial. She identifies herself as a Black woman from Boston. And at the time, she was born in 1920s. At the time, it was a struggle just accepting a people of color in a predominantly white state, as well as like just leaving those issues that we have experienced in the past that focused on racism. She, in the 1930s and 40s, she began to be, well, she had her own cleaning business. And she was a single mother, and at that time it was very hard and a challenge for her to do, but she did it and she was very successful and retired. And she educated us a lot about the struggles she, experienced and how, and the perspective of, you know, how important education was and how that became a tool that she used to become a leader of her own and also educate her children as well to have a better life than what she did. So she was very influential to me, and I took a lot of her words of wisdom and also words of encouragement to be where I am today. And then I would also say my mother. She was a widowed, single mother, and, growing up, she never showed a struggle. And I just thought this lady was just a strong woman. I'd never seen her cry. What's going on? I want to be like her. She was very engaged in my community, leading community meetings, and also an advocate for the community and ensuring that we have policies that represent us and ensuring that everyone has equitable access to the resources we had in our community. So that encouraged me a lot to further my education in public health. I would say I was an exercise health science major, but public health was an interest of mine. I was very interested in why particular populations were lacking certain things in health, and why they didn't have access to it. And that pulled me into research, where I met Dr. Italy Torres, who was a former Gaston, director of Gaston Institute and a lecturer right now. She has, although I did not speak Spanish, she has taken me in and made and clearly showed me that you don't have to look speak a certain language to be accepted and to make a change. So through her research, I've learned that a lot, and I continued that research focused on health disparities and eliminating disparities that focus on access to healthcare. And from there, I just really admired who she was, and she was unapologetically her at all times. And if she felt a certain way of an issue, she would voice it. And, you know, in some rooms, those types of voices are not accepted. In some rooms, those voices are supposed to be quiet or not even brought up at all. So she built that confidence in me to be a voice to others who don't have that voice, and also use my platform to make a change in policy. And lastly, what has definitely a woman who has definitely encouraged me to go further on and to further my education was Dr. Atiya Martin. She was the director of the Emergency Preparedness Department for the city of Boston. I was an intern of hers, and I remember I was so nervous when I started my internship because I had no idea about that emergency preparedness and what that entailed. And it's a predominantly male field. And to see a woman in leadership, especially a woman of color in leadership, was very inspiring. And she was very confident. And when she walked in the rooms, she didn't intimidate a woman, but she intimidated the men because they knew she came in with a point to make and also a plan to fix the problem. So from there, she has guided me through my studies and also my professional experience as well. And we still stay in contact with each other. I literally just spoke to her the other day on how I'm doing, where I'm going. And we have collaborated on some projects that focus on diversity and equity in workplaces. And it's great to work closely back with her again and see that her little baby has grown up into this person. So, and I forgot to say as well, Muna, I am a lecturer as well now at UMass Boston. So I teach a careers course to our students, just so they can identify a career that fits for them in the exercise and health sciences field. And also I encourage research as well. So it's very important. And also just me being a Black woman in this position means a lot. I want to say I'm the first Black woman in this position for the College of Nursing and Health Sciences. And it means a lot. And I plan on going further than this to make a change. And I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Chanel. It was very inspiring to hear you too, you know, for all of us as well. And Julie as well. So, Cassandra, would you like to introduce yourself and then, tell us who inspires you? Oh, I just want to keep an eye on the time too, everyone, just so, you know, maybe just, you know, try to keep it, I think it's like 3-4 minutes maybe, if possible, so.
Sure. Hi, everyone. Thanks, Muna, and nice to meet everyone. I've been enjoying hearing all the different conversations. So my name is Cassandra Porter. I'm a vice president and counsel to a credit card company that is global. I found the GLPP out of desperation in 2020. I saw all these women leaving the workforce and couldn't figure out why. So I joined the GLPP to look for some answers. And it's been a 3-year program for me, unlike many. And I graduate in May with a lot more information. Still don't have answers, but a lot more information. And what inspires me is, like many of the speakers today, my mother. My mother was a single parent and in the 1980s, and I watched her lose jobs and apartments all because she was a single parent, not because she was a bad worker or a bad tenant. And as I grew up and got married myself and tried to live, you know, this dream that was fed to me as a young child, that women can do it all, women can do everything, and just keep working twice as hard and you'll finally succeed. I realized that it was a big lie. And as a leader and as another woman in the community, I need to start setting a standard that women are good the way they are. Women don't need to be twice as good as a man to make the same amount of money. We should be making the same amount of money up front. And it's the little kindnesses that we can show each other and demonstrate for the world that we are one big community that needs to help each other, the better we'll be. So that's been my journey through this. And I look forward to hearing the rest of the speakers going forward. Thanks, Muna.
Thank you so much, Cassandra. Wow, that was something I didn't know about you, even though we've had lots of long conversations. And Cassandra and I share being from New Jersey, by the way, which is a very special place. So, okay, thank you. Right. Yeah. And so, Fernanda, may I ask you to introduce yourself and also tell us what inspires you?
Thank you, Muna. Yeah, it's really hard to follow after so many inspiring messages. But yeah, I'm so happy to be here and meet you all. My name is Fernanda Oliveira Costa, and I'm currently a student at UMass Boston pursuing a master's in public administration, also on gender leadership and public policy. I'm an experienced administrative professional and have been a public advocate since I joined the school in 2017. Yeah, currently just learning a lot about myself through this program and the women leaders that I've come across in the last few years. And I am totally with you on the theme of authenticity in the women leaders we admire. And the other word that keeps coming up to me is just genuine. Like when I was hearing you speak, Muna, just you're just incredibly genuine and consistent throughout for the time I've known you. And I really appreciate that about you. And to me, when you asked me to share a female leader that inspired me, the first person that came to mind was my grandmother. You know, just having these flashbacks of my grandmother with the little extra that she had and the privilege she had, she would take that and give back to her community, providing food for the homeless, clothing, and even shelter. And so I grew up watching this kind of very humble and hardworking leadership that didn't come with a title, didn't come with compensation, just a lot of thoughtfulness and this personal conscientiousness and responsibility to serve the people in the community around her that was clearly underserved and underprivileged. And that's something that I've always carried with me and in multiple volunteering experiences that I have been a part of. And most recently, I've been involved with advocacy for immigrant rights in Massachusetts, considering all the attacks on the immigrant community, particularly DACA recipients. And again, another female leader at school, she went through her own journey of having her entire family deported from the U.S. and she got home and she didn't have a family anymore. You know, it's one of the most heartbreaking stories, but also such a story of resilience. This young woman that grew up to you know, have her family taken away, be deported to her country of origin, and she remained in the U.S., sought an education for herself, and her friends supported her through that journey. And then years later, I got to meet her at UMass Boston, and she's organizing, she was leading this this program at UMass Boston for supporting DACA recipients, and she was there giving back even after all the suffering that she went through. And so I really appreciate it when women, even though they go through very difficult times, they're able to not only overcome it, and I know it's not a linear process when it comes to healing and overcoming, but eventually when they do, they're still able to, you know, bring water out of the well. So I really appreciate that and admire that. And then I think of, you know, whenever I have imposter syndrome, you know, follow me around, I think of, you know, that it's such a common struggle for so many women that are incredibly talented and brilliant and hardworking, but still, because of all this conditioning around man being more in charge or having more power, we're somehow sometimes led to believe that we're less than, or we're not as powerful or not as effective. And just like it's been a daily battle to overcome these kinds of messagings. And it's really empowering for me to look up to leaders like Ayanna Pressley, for example. Like, I just recently learned she does not have a college degree, and still, like, her heart and her hard work and integrity for the work that she does has taken her places. And she's a state senator and doing amazing work. And it's really not about, you know, just the credentials or the titles, but about consistency and character and just a genuine commitment to the work that you care about, and just having a like an open-mindedness to challenge our perceptions and learn and from each other's experiences. And so yeah, so those are some of the reasons why I admire her and other women leaders in my life so much. And they, yeah, definitely inspire me to keep going.
Thank you, Fernanda. That was really good. Thank you for the insights and the sharing. Yes, I think Congresswoman Presley is inspiring for many of us too. Yeah, she's authentic and genuinely caring and genuinely gets it too. That's what my experiences of her as well. So, I think we got everybody who's on the GLPP side who came. And you have all been great, by the way. Thank you so much. I hope that you can all stay, because I know the discussion is going to be really, really interesting. So if you have the time, to stay around. I think everyone would love to have you, you know, participate in the discussion and then be here to, you know, answer questions as well. So, let me see, Julie and Chanel and Fernanda and Cassandra, thank you. I just want to thank you again from the bottom of my heart for, you know, answering my invitation and showing up, you know, because your perspectives and learning from you has meant a lot to me too, always, you know. So, shall I hand it back now to Linza for the facilitation of the discussion? Is it the time for that, Linza?
Not quite. Usually we don't do that until 1 o'clock, but we save whatever time now until 1 for people to directly ask questions of any one of you.
Oh, okay.
If you wouldn't mind doing it, sort of question and answer, and then we can enter discussion at 1.
Oh, okay. All right. So, excellent.
And I have a question, which I guess I would ask all of you, including you, Muna, but at this point, you know, some of us have grandchildren in their 20s, and I'm wondering if you had a piece of advice, each one of you, to give to someone in their 20s moving into their 30s. What piece of advice would you give them in order to be in the culture as it is now and being a woman as things are now, and to be able to enter into your 30s with as much confidence and clarity as possible. So I would love to hear from each of you if there's a piece of advice that you have.
Anybody want to raise their hand about this? No. Well, one thing I would say is that, not to be dismayed, by the very hierarchical nature of our society, maybe, and to be ready to question that and be ready to tackle it too. And, you know, and perhaps, you know, if you want the world to be better for your grandchildren, I don't think we're leaving the world in a really great shape. The people, you know, our generation. So, you probably do need to be a little more like forceful, a little more proactive in, dismantling the hierarchical structures and systems that are, you know, creating this great inequality in our society. I think right now what the richest three people in America now have more wealth than the bottom 50%. So, and that, you know, that you cannot sustain democracy in any way, shape and form when you have this kind of, when financial power really equals political power in this country. So I hope that they take confidence, in the fact that they're also a generation that has largely been raised with very open-minded views. They are less racist. They are less homophobic. And I think in general, more open-minded. So that, I think they might have the key. And they're also more environmentally oriented. So they might have the key to really making good changes.
So let's say that, so we would say to this person in their 20s, you know, don't be dismayed by a hierarchy. Speak up to it. Question it.
Yes.
I guess the question I would have from that is, if I'm not enrolled in a program like yours, Muna.
Yes.
And I'm living in, or my granddaughter's in Michigan, for example, where do I go to join with other women to do that? Like, what are the nationwide organizations or what are the places where I'm likely to find other voices like that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, first of all, our program is online.
That's open to everybody.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, all right. Well, I'll just answer quickly and then I'll let everybody else take over. But our program, first of all, it's online now. So anyone around the country can actually join it. But, there are also, you know, institutions like the YWCA is also a national organization with a lot of opportunities to, for leadership roles and for being able to help the community. But I think definitely look at civil society, look at your nonprofit organization, see what's out there. And also faith-based institutions can also be a place where you can make a difference and find camaraderie. But and now that we're in this age when we especially the post-pandemic age, there is a lot that's going on online too. I'll think about it and I'll put some more ideas in the chat too about, women's organizations that are very empowering that, and ways to build, strengthen your own leadership skills and find support for, being a leader who wants to make changes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, are any of the rest of the women of each of you who presented, do you have any ideas about what somebody 27 years old in Michigan, for example, how she can get the camaraderie, you can't do it alone. Where would she go?
Lindsay, Chanel has her hand up.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say the same thing you literally just exactly said. You can't do it by yourself and just know that. Mm-hmm. I feel like as women, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves. We think that the superheroes of everything, but you can't do it on your own. You need to find a support system or a network that will support you in what you do and right. Things like that. And the best way to do that is start from the root of where you are in your office. Like if you're at work, where in your office can you connect with someone that share the same views or your community as well? I think it's important to move as a collective instead of individually, because you'll have more support. You'll get less pushback for your voice to be heard. As far as identifying these opportunities, I mean, for me, Google is my best friend. But I literally would Google woman events in Boston, for example, and those things would pop up on Eventbrite, things like that. And I would just attend events and then network. And from there, I've learned that, you know, when you network, you'll find women from many and women leaders from many different organizations that you can connect with. And from there, they most likely have fellowships and opportunities. But if she's already or someone's already in school or something, identifying a woman's studies department or something like that, and seeing what events they have and if you are interested in that major and possibly changing to that. So just I think it's a collective thing. And for me, a lot of networking you'll need to do and just understand that you're a threat. Just being a woman, being in these types of positions and being ready for that mentally, I think that is important as well. Be aware of what to expect and what, you know, might come about of it and be prepared for that. So.
Thank you, Chanel. Are there any other questions anyone here wants to ask of Muna or Chanel or Julie or Janice? Fernanda, Cassandra, yeah, Mary Rose.
Hi, thank you all so much for your interesting bios and what you're doing. I was thinking about, you mentioned Ayanna Pressley, but I was thinking about Mayor Wu and Maura Healey and other women that are in big positions now in our state. And not that I expect them to just work for women, but I wonder what Mayor Wu's been very interested in housing for, you know, people who aren't, you know, better housing for the poor, basically. I just wondered what other topics you think she should work towards, any of you.
Yeah, housing is certainly an issue. The whole criminal justice is a really important issue in our country, in our city, state, society in general, too. But
I would say childcare, too, as well. I mean, it's very important because we aren't able to do the jobs we need to do if we don't have that type of support. And like Mona said, housing is a big issue right now. And I work with women, as well that struggle in finding a place called home. And with the pandemic and more homeless individuals, it's very hard. It's a lot of wait lists and hold and waiting. And, I know Mayor Wu can't do it all right now. I'm sure that's a focus that she has. But I always try to encourage my community, be a voice so she can hear what the problems are. If we're quiet, she won't know and there's, you know, she won't know where to help us. So it's, I think those things are important right now.
I wanted to also, you know, ask your question to, especially Cassandra, because Cassandra was talking about how it's, like a big lie that women are supposed to manage and juggle it all. So, and it reminded me of something I read in a McKenzie report. I was looking about women's leadership and it said basically that women, like you can't have a work-life balance. This is what it said in this McKenzie report. It said basically what you have to do is just manage your energy. That's what it says. Like knowing where your energy comes from, where it goes and what you can do to manage it. So, I was like a little bit alarmed, like, oh, no work-life balance. We're just supposed to be working all the time and just managing how we use our energy. But anyway, so Cassandra, I wanted to hear what you thought about that.
I would agree with that because
yeah.
The idea of a balance, I think, puts more pressure on women. It's like one more thing we can't achieve, frankly. And depending on where you are, most women are caretakers. and men too, but forget having children, just being a caretaker. And if the pandemic taught me anything, it was lots of people need care. And in society, we don't value caretaking and we don't value women's work. So to expect women to have this huge career and to have perfect children and to have parents that are well fed and not, you know, slovenly is just getting to be ridiculous. I think instead we need to push back and say, here's what's realistic. Here's what I'm willing to do for work. And it's much easier said than done, as I'm juggling right now, trying to answer work email and work talk to you all. But more importantly, I think my job as a senior attorney in my company is to demonstrate to the world that we should be more empathetic to younger workers and not expect them to jump the same hurdles that we had to jump through, because it's like a rite of passage. Well, you know what? That rite of passage is stupid. Who cares? Working 60 hours a week and having a baby. Like it's just ridiculous and just give up at that point. So that's my take on it.
Right. And these people are held up though, like, you know, all the time, like, oh, this person was, you know, we were just talking about all the amazing women though who worked so hard in our lives. But I mean, it does take a toll on people. And then, you know, you can't always develop your other talents too. And you're struggling between, you know, more than full-time employment and childcare and
household. Yeah, my mom worked 60 hours a week when I was a kid and she never saw me and she regrets it now. Mm. Right. I'm almost 50 years old. My mother is, luckily she was young. She's just only 20 years older than I am. We're lucky that we now have a relationship, but I never saw her ever. Yeah. We didn't have a relationship for most of my life because of it. And I would say a lot of working mothers, including me with my own child, had that same problem. It's a constant battle, and it shouldn't have to be.
Right.
It shouldn't. I actually recently had a niece March 1st, and my sister was struggling in between. She was told from her work, you need to work these particular days. If you can't, you just have to go. And it's, to me, that's just the hardest thing. And I felt like it was very stressful closer to her time of giving birth because she was trying to figure out, how am I going to be able to make an income to survive with me and my child and things like that. But thank God, she has the support of us, her family. So unfortunately she had to leave her role and, attend to her child. And I think it is important that a mother is able to bond with her child, at least for the first year, some more than 4 weeks or 12 weeks. It's definitely needed. But even if she goes back into the work field, she has to think twice. Even with the support of her partner, it still is a struggle. And I just find it so crazy that places of employment still aren't considering women who have kids. So it just hurts. And unfortunately, like, it makes me have a different perspective on having kids now. Like, is it right? Is it good to have them now? No, I need to hold off because I don't want to be in this situation. So. And that's not fair. That shouldn't be it. That shouldn't be the case. So.
No, it shouldn't be the case. Mm-hmm.
I have a question for Julie. I don't know. Julie, are you still there?
Oh,
she might not be.
Julie, are you still there? She might have stepped away for a minute, but she'll probably be back. Oh, there she is.
Oh, there she is.
Hey, Julie.
I'm here. Hi, I'm just Julie. Getting something from my kitchen. Sorry.
That's okay. I had a question for you because you were talking about the work that you created to support women who have immigrated from Africa, and they have a very low sense of female confidence because of it. You said female inferiority. And I wondered if you could tell us what you think are the major ways that a woman can get past that. What have you designed to help them, you know, neutralize that message?
Yes. We created this community gathering. So we meet once a month and we create this environment where women feel free to talk about their issues. because in the bigger family environment or at work, they are not really listened to. You know, they are not the majority and they do not speak English as a first language, of course. And they have this fear of talking, of being assertive. So we created this community gathering and we have conferences about life in the US, about health. I remember we had a conference on gynecologic cancers. Mm-hmm. Was very well attended because most women do not seek preventative care. They are just so busy working to make a living, to support their families, and most of them did not really go far in terms of education. So they all those jobs that don't really pay good, and they have to work long hours. So we had, for example, I can give an example of a woman who died of long COVID. She didn't even know she had COVID. And then we had another woman who died of cancer, breast cancer, which was diagnosed in the final stages because she never took the time to see a doctor, you know, preventative. She only goes to the doctor when the symptoms start showing up. So we create this environment where we provide education, we provide information, and also we socialize, which is very important for our mental health, especially in a foreign country. Mm-hmm. So I hope that answers your question. And we created networks here. I live in Brockton. So we created networks with different community-based organizations. So we work together in terms of, you know, child education, so many more violence, you know, gun violence for our youth. So we work on that, and that's, you know, that's what we do. Hope that answers the question.
Yeah, thank you. You're all just amazing. Any more questions of any of our speakers? Paula.
Oh, you're muted.
Oh, yep, here I come. I just want to thank everyone, Muna, and all the women that you invited. I mean, I actually found myself taking notes. I'm so amazing. And what the thread that ran through it is the struggle with the hierarchical structure, which is the patriarchal structure. And I was just, I connected with that because it's a struggle, and I appreciate all that you're doing in leadership. So thank you. I don't have any questions now, but I may later. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to highlight what Julie said was, you know, about these, whether they created community, they created spaces for community and spaces for women. And I think that that is kind of a common theme of what I was talking about too, about the women's organizations that, that enable women to come together and feel like, yeah, what I'm going through is normal, you know, and that I'm normal, that I'm okay, you know, because we all know that our society tells you that every problem you have is your own personal problem and your own personal family, right? Instead of systemic large picture, you know, systemic problem.
That, you know. Well, you know, we were originally Theological Opportunities Program, and when it came time to change our name, I remember these discussions about, well, if we call ourselves Women Explore, will men feel like they can't come? Is that what we're really about? And I remember a lot of discussion about, do we dare to do that? And once in a while, men come. Once in a while, they stay for a while. They come for a few weeks. But, and we have male speakers, so we're not male exclusive, certainly. But we did decide to go ahead and say, no, this is a woman's space. Mm-hmm. Men can come in, but this is a woman's space. So we're moving into our discussion time, and if any or all of you can stay with us, that would be great. And this is where you get to maybe say something you are thinking about, something that you believe, or something you want.